Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Caberti, founder of the Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you 3 new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we jump into today's episode, let me ask you a quick question. How much would your life change if you could make 6 figures from your content? Imagine being able to quit your 9-to-5 job, do what you love for a living, and spend more time with your family. That's what we help our students do at the Content Marketing Plaza, an 8-week program that will help you build your way to 6 figures via your content. You can learn more about the Plaza by heading over to contentmarketingplaza.com, which will be in the show notes. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. One of the things we've talked a little bit about on Breakthrough Success is Amazon selling. And it is such an opportunity for anyone to do, whether you start as a side hustle, you really want to do this thing full time. And we have someone with us today. And she is a 7-figure Amazon seller and online business coach who helps entrepreneurs source profitable products, build premium brands, and sell their online businesses. She has sold 2 of her Amazon businesses, one of them for 7 figures, and she is currently building her 3rd global brand. She created Product University and the Amazon Navigator as online training to help online sellers source profitable products, follow a step-by-step process, and get up and selling fast on Amazon. Today's guest for episode 309 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Sophie Howard. Sophie, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to having a good chat with you.
Sophie, I'm really happy to be talking with you about Amazon selling because I feel like this is such an opportunity for a lot of people, and I know we'll really get deep into the nuts and bolts of it. Before we do that, though, can you just give us a background? Why did you become an Amazon seller, and what was your initial journey like?
Okay, so back in the beginning, which now feels like many years ago, although it was only 5, it's been a fairly intense 5 years, I was doing what so many people are doing now, just in the day job grind 9-to-5, although I was actually doing part-time hours because I'd just come back to work after having my 2nd child and barely getting ahead financially. I was working for the government doing foreign policy stuff for the New Zealand government. And was paying a nice nanny to look after the children while I was working really hard. And at the end of the week, I was absolutely stuffed. I was exhausted. I'd worked really hard for someone else all week. I'd paid the nanny to have loads of fun with my kids at the beach while I was stuck in a cubicle, breaking even on the week. So something had to change. So I'd worked in tech transfer before, doing kind of business to business thing, you know, deals through from a university into the private sector. And that's a long and slow and quite hard game. And raising capital's pretty grim. That doesn't seem like something you could do easily with kids on the side. You know, using those skills didn't seem like the thing to do from a, you know, new mum working from home kind of model. That wasn't quite going to cut it. So I was looking for online stuff. So I did lots of research. I looked at, you know, the binary options trading, the multi-level marketing, Forex, you name it. I had a good dig around. But when I saw a friend of mine's husband, who's an accountant, was doing really well on Amazon, and he lives in New Zealand as well, because there's a lot of businesses that only work if you've got a good local population base, or, you know, if I'm living in New Zealand, I can't get rich selling products to people nearby. I had to be online. So I hadn't sold to consumers before, but I loved the Amazon model because you could be hands off with the product. There was no kind of limit to the growth rate. If they were doing all the shipping and handling and warehousing, and all I had to get good at was choosing the right kind of product and setting things up right, I knew I could outsource a lot of the downstream operational side. So big fan of Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week. That sort of framed everything I think about with business. Ever, you know, that must be 10 years old, that book, and every sentence of it still makes complete sense, whether Google SEO's peaked or different social media platforms have come and gone. You know, the principles of that book are so good, and that's what I try and run everything by, just be really efficient, outsource everything, and very big on lifestyle as well, especially now I've got a young family. So The Amazon model seemed the best fit for being able to make money and have a good lifestyle. So I wasn't in a position where I could throw a ton of cash at real estate. I didn't have loads of hours. I couldn't keep exchanging my hours for dollars, freelancing or something, because that wouldn't work with kids. So it had to be something pretty lean and pretty low capital to start up, and also worth doing because I had a good job. It's not like I was comparing it to earning nothing. I was comparing it to a really good job. So Amazon was it, and got off to a pretty good start, chose the first product really well. I think there was maybe some beginner's luck, who knows? We'll never really know, because you never get great data, actually. You choose your product and you get started, but you never get to do a good sort of A-B split test, this product, you know, at this time versus the same budget on a different product. So anyway, the first one went really well, and I kept doing more of the same.
And it's interesting you got that start. You heard it's working for someone else. Why not me? One of the things that I do want to touch on is that some people, they may have heard about Amazon selling a few times but have not jumped in yet. Maybe because they know it's an investment, they're not sure where this will go, they don't know all the details. Well, I mean, we'll talk about details in this episode, but for someone who really wants to just get started and see the potential, how would you recommend we get our feet wet with this?
So Amazon's just such a huge company, and that's what is the best thing about it, because all those customers are turning up looking to go shopping every single day and searching in the keywords. So there's other business models out there, you know, drop shipping or something, where you don't need to buy the stock or the inventory up front. You run your advert, you get into your website. When you make a sale, then the manufacturer ships your product. So the cash flow is a bit better on other models. But learning how to choose the right type of product that can sell for profits on Amazon, I think, is the best business model out there, because you get a good margin on every sale. You've got to juggle your cash flow a bit more carefully to get started and keep in stock if it takes off quickly. But if there's one thing to get good at online, it's finding products that people actually want. So there's, you know, there's a whole game around being the best pay-per-click operator, or you know, coming up with the fanciest Facebook ads and analyzing those to bits to, you know, get the most traffic to your site for your budget and getting those metrics cranked. But if you can just find something that people are already looking for and offer them the best version of that product on a platform that they trust, I don't think you can beat that. So I teach people how to source products and find the right kinds of products to sell that usually aren't mass produced, not on Alibaba, not out of Chinese factories. I usually choose for myself quite different sorts of products, and everybody I help, you know, there's a ton of stuff online for free about how to drive an Amazon account, but really the whole thing's won and lost on your product selection at the start of the whole game, because the how to drive your Amazon account's the same for everyone, and frankly you should be outsourcing that pretty quickly anyway, the day-to-day customer service and you know, just you need to write a good listing, you need to have good images, but all that work's all kind of front end loaded. You do it once, you choose the product once, you get your branding and your packaging done once, and then you just get a product that might have a 5-year lifespan just generating you passive income every single day.
And I mean, it's interesting you mentioned just really honing in on that one product. I mean, some sellers, like, they go with dozens of products, they go with a lot of different options, but I really think just focusing on, like, just finding one product, really being able to prove the concept, would be really big. So what exactly goes into finding that one product that can generate a high margin and has demand?
Yeah, well, I teach people to start with their first product, not expecting it to be a world beater, but there's definitely, if you're learning a new skill, you want to get that feedback loop happening fast and starting to feel confident in the platform and knowing your way around your own business because it's new. So I don't encourage people to look for the perfect $1 million product on day one. I think, you know, if you can keep your expenses down to, you know, a few hundred dollars investment and just get a product up and selling, maybe not for the, you know, 40%+ margins you can get on some products. So you've always got that trade-off of there's more traffic and more volume going through, but also more competition at one end of the spectrum, more competition from other sellers or even Amazon themselves, or going to something a bit more niche and obscure and a bit less obvious. They're often really cheap to start, low competition. You're on page one straight away. Getting the holy grail on Amazon is all about getting onto page one. 86% of sales on Amazon come from customers buying off that first page of search results, a bit like the Google SEO game. You've got to kind of get ranked. So in a competitive product, if you turn up with some vegetable spiralizer or something that's ranked in the top 5,000 products of a big Amazon category, you are just up against some serious players, and you're just going to get lost and frustrated and have to throw a lot of money at a big launch and just even predicting how much inventory you need when that stuff jumps around so much is really hard. So I like to start small, and even if I've got a big budget, you know, I've sold an Amazon business and I'm starting the next brand. What I did in the middle of this year when I started my latest brand was choose kind of a theme. I had a product idea and a lot of related products, and there's lots of variations. So I spent $13,000 launching 68 products. So if you sort of average that out, and I went pretty big because I kind of know what I'm doing now, but that probably was averaging a few hundred dollars per product that launched. It wasn't thousands. So definitely you can keep your costs down and get off to a good, fast start and get your confidence and skills up before you start throwing money at really big opportunities. So learning or earning is good. And I think it's good just to start off with something simple and fast and just get your feet wet and feel confident. And then when you know the process, you can put all your mental energy into the product selection, which is the bit that matters. And getting a bit of cash flow, Amazon paying you every 2 weeks is lovely. And it's a great business model. So you don't need to have 50 amazing products. If you've got half a dozen, 10 or so good Amazon products, you can live off that business, obviously, depending on your lifestyle, but I could. So you don't need to build an empire. It can be very lean, very low competition, low drama. You don't want to be getting your products copied or Amazon on your case about safety issues. You know, you want to keep a really quiet life on Amazon. They're a big platform. You don't want to end up in a tussle with them or with other sellers. And so a lot of the mainstream courses that teach people how to do Amazon encourage them to go after the sort of the mainstream kind of find a bestseller and copy it and sort of tap into that market share. And just by virtue of turning up, you'll get some sales because it's a popular thing. And you might need to compete on price or tweak some features, but you're really competing. Whereas I like to sort of skulk around in the lower levels and just quietly hoover up lots of sales that nobody else is chasing, kind of like the long tail approach, which seems to work pretty well. It diversifies your risk and it gives you more sources of income because your budget lets you launch a lot more products. And you just don't have the headaches. I just see a lot of people messing around with Amazon's algorithm, doing tricky stuff to get ranked with big giveaways, or fiddly stuff with URLs, or, you know, there's a whole industry out there of how to hack Amazon to get onto page one. And I don't really like that world. So I keep out of it and just do simple, less competitive products.
And you mentioned, getting on page one. Obviously, if you pick a less competitive product, there's fewer players out there, which means it's easier to rank on page one. One of the things that I do want to ask is, what exactly goes into promoting an Amazon seller business? Is it a sole focus on ads? Is it organic traffic? Like, what would you say is the some of the essentials for a strategy where you're promoting your Amazon products?
My promotion strategy is really small and simple. So I spend probably 99% of my time and energy at the front end, sort of assessing the opportunity and checking that the competition really is low and watching the trends and seeing who the other players are. And if I know I can do a better product and keep a great margin, then when I launch, if I've done my homework right, there's not very much more to do. I know that there's people searching for a particular search term. I know what else is going to come up on page one. I know what my customers are thinking about what product they're after, if it's a gift or how it needs to be packaged or what they're looking for in their purchase. So if I've done my homework right and have picked a product that meets all my criteria and does as it should do, all I do is run pay-per-click advertising on Amazon to hoover up all the possible eyeballs that are interested in a product like the one I'm selling. But I've done a lot of I've had, you know, some of the best Facebook people in the world, you know, promote some of my products, and, you know, these agencies that do, you know, amazing stuff to promote products, content marketing, Google stuff, Facebook ads, what else have we done, influencer stuff. And for me, I know your business is, you know, completely different. And for some industries and some types of products, and certainly for higher priced products, all that, the other social sort of selling models are really important. But for a simple Amazon product, you can have a bunch of products with no external promotion and they go really well. So when I sell my business, which I plan to do for all my businesses I start, I want to have a nice lump sum a year or two down the track. It makes it look better to the potential buyers if there is a website sitting there and a basic Facebook page sitting there and you've got a trademark and you've done some other bits just to build the brand out a bit. But they don't add much to the bottom line. That's more just kind of a credibility thing for later, and also an opportunity if someone comes along and they've got a huge social media following around the theme of your product, then that's a great opportunity for them to pick up the Amazon side. But you can't be good at everything. And every time I've sort of gone down these other tracks and looked at other platforms and channels, none of them have given such a good payoff as putting my time and energy into choosing the right products that just suit Amazon customers rather than having to promote them to get the sale. So that's just been my experience. Obviously, people who are big on branding or run Facebook ad agencies or sell courses on, you know, whatever else, they'll have their examples and their bias because they've had their results with other methods. But my methods just on Amazon alone have really paid off. And it's kind of like Warren Buffett does 99.9% of his time researching investment opportunities, and then he'll make the purchase, invest in the company. And then because he's done the homework right, it should just go well and be a long game. Like, you don't do that much work for a quick win or a quick hack. You do it because you think that product's going to make you profit for years to come. And those are the kind of brands I like to launch on Amazon.
And it's interesting you mentioned, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this. You mentioned you always have a plan to sell the business. I'm wondering if you could share why you would sell an Amazon business. I mean, some people, they would argue, if it's doing that well, why not just keep it and let the income continue coming your way? I'm wondering what you're thinking of is selling the business and how you would find buyers for it.
Cool. Yeah. So it wasn't a thing I planned to do at the beginning of my first business. When I first started out, my target sort of monthly passive income from my Amazon business was quite modest, sort of between $5,000 and $10,000 US dollars was plenty for me to be really happy with that outcome. But it shot off and it was doing, you know, $250,000. US in sales a month within the first year or so, well over $1 million in the first year in sales. And so I suddenly was sitting there with this huge new income stream. And some days it felt too good to be true. I was wondering if it was beginner's luck or if it was just because of this famous quarter four on Amazon going crackers with the sales. But then the next quarter one, it went up again. And so I got to about 18 months and I had all my, so our New Zealand tax year end is the end of March. So end of quarter one, I'd had a really good quarter four, had an even better quarter one at the start of the next year. And I've got a friend who's a broker, business broker, company called Digital Exits, a guy called Jock Purtle, who's Australian, really sharp. So I had a chat to him about what would my little business be worth. I didn't know whether Amazon businesses were worth much, but they're very low tech to run. So people who want a lifestyle business that's online, a lot of those online businesses, you need to be churning out lots of blogs, or you need to be really tightly managing Facebook ads with a big budget being carefully looked after every day. But with an Amazon business, you can be pretty passive with it. It truly is one of those 4-hour a week businesses. And so I thought there'd probably be a pool of people interested in picking up a ready built one. That when I had a mortgage still, a lump sum to clear my mortgage meant we could make some massive lifestyle changes. So wouldn't need to work anymore. My husband wouldn't need to work anymore. We were living in the capital city and we were keen to move down to the South Island and ski more and have horses and all the stuff that was sort of on the wish list. If we got a lump sum, we could do it straight away. So the banks don't really get these online businesses always. So cash is king. So I didn't really want to take out a mortgage on a move down to the South Island based on an online business. Even though I could see it was tracking well, the bank wouldn't be having any of that. So thought a cash buyer would be king. So Jock valued it. All my tax year end stuff was all tidied away. Everything had been, you know, checked through, filed, everything squared up, neat and tidy. And Jock took a look at it and said, oh, I'd find you a buyer for that for seven figures overnight, and he did. So the first one sold really quickly for seven figures, and then I started a new one, another whole Amazon brand on the same sorts of principles that the first one was, which was, again, it wasn't mass produced from China. My first product was handmade in Nepal. The second business was tea, organic tea, and, you know, from really premium tea plantations. So the branding and packaging and that whole presentation of the product was really, really important. So I did another really kind of premium end product that had very low competition. And that took off and sold that one last year. And then this year started the third one. So it just frees you up. If you can take some of those chips off the table when your business is worth, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars, those lump sums buy you an investment property. It lets you diversify and build other assets that just allow you to build long-term wealth rather than just short-term cash flow. So Amazon's a fickle beast as well. You never know when there's a policy change coming, or they might say, okay, anyone in New Zealand can't trade anymore. And they've just had a bit of a battle with the Australian government over tax stuff. You just don't know what the future holds for any kind of business. If I was sitting running an eight-figure Amazon business, I wouldn't sleep very well at night. If you're doing that well, there's people watching you, there's other sellers, your card is marked. So I don't like to have a really big, high-profile brand on Amazon because it's such a target for other sellers who can see from all the spy tools out there how much money you're making. So all those tools are great when you're using them to research your own opportunities. But if you're doing really well, other people will see those products that are doing 100 units a day and come and work very hard to get a bit of the action. Whereas the products I sell, they're lower volume, there's less of them, and I'll build a portfolio of 10 or 20 or 50 products and scale that and then sell it. So you're never going to be in a situation where you've got an eight-figure Amazon business that gets closed down because some competitor makes up some false safety complaint to Amazon about you. And there's some horrible tactics that go on at that really aggressive top end of Amazon, and I just do not want to tussle with those big boys. So I like to keep completely under the radar, do really premium brands, really low risk products, ones that won't attract too much competition. But when customers see the kind of products I sell, they really like them, they can see that they're the best in that class, and they buy them. So I get a really, really high conversion rate, sort of well over 20 or 30% usually. Unheard of if you've got a Shopify type site, that would be maybe 3%, it's a good day. Whereas it can be 30% conversion on an Amazon product with a 40% profit margin and no manual labor. There's no staff. And I really like keeping it small. There's people out there who really optimize with the scaling. They're really, you know, really sharp on the operations. They juggle that cash flow and inventory just right. And they, you know, their pay-per-click efficiency is amazing for the advertising. So I'm not so good at that. I'm, you know, I'm a startup kind of girl. I like the creation side. I like the ideas and the products and the branding. And then when it gets into tweaking it to squeeze that, you know, extra, the last 5% profit out, I'm a bit bored and I'm ready to start the next one. So somebody else out there finds the startup bit hard and has cash because they want an online business, I'd quite happily exchange my 2 years' work for a big lump sum that's been profitable all the way, and then you know, buy property, start another Amazon brand, and rinse and repeat. So it is a like I see the brands I started 5 years ago still making tens of thousands of dollars a month in profit, not sales but profit, and that's nice. You know, the guy that bought that's really happy, and I'm really happy. So it's a good deal if you can get the timing right and it works for you. And I do think it's good to just diversify a bit in life as well. Just every time I've sold a business, I've used it as an opportunity to go, right, I'm going to get some one-on-one private coaching with the best person in the world at whatever, get really good at something else, and then apply that in business or my personal life or whatever. But I've had some really good opportunities through having just those little breaks every couple of years where I've had a lump of cash, a chance to reset how I want to track in business.
That's really interesting because, I mean, with the knowledge you have, it's very repeatable. You just have to find the right product, again, based on the categories. But I'm wondering if you could go a little deeper into how exactly do we find that product, like looking at the categories. I know we touched upon this earlier, but are there any tools you use to make this easier? Or do you just use Amazon's search engine in some specific way to find what you're looking for?
Yeah, good question, because there are a staggering number of very clever tools out there. I do worry about those, though. Like, my products, the numbers are wrong on those tools. When I look at my own numbers that I know are facts, and what I see on those tools, they don't match up. And then those tools aren't consistent across each other. Some of them have been wildly out, and I've used them in the past and picked deaf products that didn't sell in the volumes that the data said they should have done, like out by factor of 1,000, not by a little bit of deviation. You know, there's some really, really wrong numbers floating around in those tools, which scares me. So I do 99% of my research in the real world, and on Amazon as well, but don't ever make a decision just on those tools. Sometimes I cross-check stuff or have a look at what competitors are doing. It's kind of an efficient place to gather up a lot of data, but I just don't really trust the data. So I go to a lot of trade shows. So what I've been doing in the last year or two is taking groups of other online sellers, whether it's Amazon or eBay or Etsy or whatever, people with Shopify stores who are selling products online, and they want to have an edge with the product. So rather than winning the game because they've got the most eye-catching Facebook ad or the best offer, or the cleverest funnel with the best upsell, they've actually just got a unique product that nobody else is selling that people see and love. And so I go to quite a lot of trade shows. So I don't, none of my current products were sourced from Alibaba. Nothing's from China at the moment. I've got products coming in from 4 countries to my new Amazon brand, and they're all found in person. So it sounds like that's a bit hard to scale or teach or, you know, do long term. But if you go to one good trade show for a week, make it a week trip, and find 50 products in a week, find a whole bunch of suppliers, see the quality of the product, meet the suppliers, eyeball to eyeball, shake hands, you know, agree lead times, make tweaks to the product, get the thing shipped quickly. That is a really unique point of difference in an online product business. And I've got all my best products, that sort of product. They've been made, not necessarily handmade or artisan type products, but they're not just mass produced plastic that anyone else can get hold of exactly the same product in one or two clicks. So a little bit harder to find, but also they sell for a premium because they're different and eye-catching. They become strong brands because nobody else is doing exactly the same thing. It's not like selling a garlic press on Amazon or a jump rope or barbecue tools. They're kind of quite different products. They're usually given as gifts. So people are not tight with their budgets. They want to be generous and they want to make the gift look thoughtful. So the packaging and stuff gets done really, really well, but simple. And just stay in stock. So I've had products from countries like Nepal and India. My tea all came from Sri Lanka. So there's definitely something around where the product comes from. All those different countries have got different specialties. So in India, there's these amazing colorful silks or nice textiles or brass and copper or silver products. So those are premium products, and they're from a country that's got cheap labor. They don't have the 25% tariff that's now just come in for China through the trade war stuff recently. So it's a real point of difference. Those suppliers that you meet at the trade show in India, say, they don't even have a website. So nobody can come and reverse and engineer your product, find your supplier, copy your product. So you get a really long runway with each good product you launch. You can negotiate really small orders. You can take photographs of the product there and then, and you can just be really decisive. And if you don't do those sort of efficient hits, finding a whole bunch of products, you can just spend your whole life milling around, half looking for the next perfect product. Whereas that exercise of going in person and just seeing a whole load of inspiration, when you do your research online for a product, you only see what comes up in your search results of the thing you thought to search for. Whereas if you go to a trade show, you see stuff that's not selling yet, you're ahead of the curve. You see, you just get this inspiration of things that you didn't know could be the next product you might sell. But when you see it, you go, ah, that's an interesting thing. And if it jumps out and catches your eye as you walk through a busy trade show, then it's probably quite photogenic and going to jump off the page of someone scrolling through Amazon pages looking for a gift or, So you've got to obviously have a product that matches up well with a good keyword where there's enough action happening, but then you can have quite a different product to everyone else's. And you can have a really good margin, a product that when somebody comes along to buy your business, your supply chain's really tight. You've got an exclusive supply agreement with that supplier. Nobody else on Amazon can, you know, in two clicks find and copy your product and just cut you out of the loop. So it feels more robust to me doing business that way. And yeah, I just see a lot of products on Amazon that are very me too. Can't really use me too in the same term anymore because it's now been hijacked for other use. But that sort of same kind of product, they're all just variations, really close variations on a theme, all mass produced. I don't like those sorts of products. If you start to do really well, people come and copy. If you do super, super well, Amazon will come and do it themselves. So I've never, ever been hijacked. I've launched nearly 1,000 different products on Amazon now, and no one's ever copied me or even tried. And all my suppliers, in fact, nearly all of them, not quite all over the years, but they'll all give me exclusive agreements that they'll only supply me for Amazon, which is great. So you can launch with confidence, knowing if this thing flies, it's all yours. And then really focus on negotiating a small minimum order and partnering up with those suppliers so that your suppliers kind of become your secret weapon. They want you to succeed and do business together rather than beating them around the head on the lowest price you can get that single unit for. So I play a much longer game and much more premium products and much harder to copy and build them to sell them. So there's a real formula around what a potential buyer wants to see when they start looking at your prospectus and they send their lawyers and accountants through to do due diligence. If you've just got something that's bought from Alibaba, they add a zero to the end and throw it up on Amazon and it's tracking okay, that's a very hard business to sell because the buyer's advisors will tell them to run a mile. Whereas if you've got a much tighter supply chain and a stronger brand and you've got a strategy around sort of the defensive side as well, not just how you're going to promote sales, but how you've protected yourself as you've gone, that's a much, much easier business to sell. So that's what I'd teach other people to do, how to find the products, but also how to get that whole business built to sell from the very beginning.
And how do you go about getting those agreements down? What does the conversation look like for that?
So I'll usually be talking to a potential supplier saying, I'd like to place an order, think the products look great. I'll ask them to show me the whole catalog, all the things they make, and find out which ones are popular in which markets and which ones they're excited about and why and what's new and what's on its way out. So I get a feel for what they could do long term, you know, what sort of range and capability they've got and their production capacity. And then I'll say, could we start with a really small test order? So just, you know, normally the MOQ, the minimum order quantity might be a few thousand units. So I'll say, could we do a few hundred? And if they go, oh, no, you know, that's just not possible. Sometimes they'll say yes if it's not so they might have a target of, say, the minimum order has to be $1,000. And so they'd said to you the minimum order's, you know, 1,000 units, at $1 each. But maybe they'll mix and match and that give you the chance to launch more products for the same budget. That can work. Or you say, well, we don't need to make all the modifications or any fancy packaging, just as is. Or if you've got another order that you're producing for someone else, can we throw some on the end of that production run? And, you know, they don't need to be quite how I want to do the brand long term, but just get some data on that keyword and that type of product on Amazon. And then I'll say to them, you know, I ask them for quotes as well, not just for one unit. And I'll sort of signal that I want to be serious. So I don't go in and brag about, you know, I'm some super duper fancy seller. I say, you know, I'm really serious about this. This is my sole source of income, you know, running, you know, Amazon stuff. I'm all about Amazon. I specialize in Amazon. I have done for years. And I'm, you know, when I start a new brand, I really want to know it's going to go well. So I've done my research on the product. The demand side looks great. But as we start working together, I'll want to be able to launch products knowing that it's, you know, it's going to be worth my while putting the effort and budget into promoting them and getting them launched and ranked. So what I want from them is for them to give me an exclusive agreement. And they might not say yes to that on day one, but they might say, well, if the volume's looking good at 6 months, we'll lock it in then, and then we can renew it every year for exclusive supply. That's fine. So I have it in writing. I mean, it would never stand up in a court if you found that they'd supplied someone else and you tried to haul someone in India into court to argue about this thing. You'd end up just having a big tussle with lawyers. I mean, it would be legally binding, but your ability to implement it's quite tough. But just it's another one of those things they've had to read it and sign it. Somebody senior in the company signed it. When you sell the business, those signed documents are in your due diligence folder. I'll ask what the price breaks are as the orders get really big. So rather than say, I'm really impressive and give me a sole supply agreement, exclusive rights forever. I'll say things like, you know, if the cost per unit for 500 units is $3, if I was to get 10,000 units, what's the price per unit? How many can you fit in a container? And start just talking big numbers that give me numbers to model the best case scenarios if it all goes well. Like that's the price if we get the volumes right up, which is good. So you know your margin will be a lot better there. So you know how much better. Because you save on the shipping when it goes by sea and the cost of your goods comes right down by per unit. But it just signals to them that you're not one of these tire kickers. They get so many people, especially if you're sourcing people on suppliers online. They have so many inquiries that never go anywhere. So I like to just explain to them what I'm going to do. And that if I do what I do with a supplier and the right kind of product, it goes well. And I need a few things to be lined up for it to go well, which one of which is me having confidence that competitors can't get their hands on it straight away. So that's always worked. And I get better payment terms. I don't always have to pay up front or before it ships. Sometimes I can pay the balance 2 weeks after the product's landed in the States. I've already been paid by Amazon for having sold half of it by the time I have to pay the supplier. So all that stuff around the partnership with the supplier, some of it's sort of negotiation skills, some of it's having a framework and some set questions that you just always run through, and some of it is just the type of supplier that you're talking to. If they're at the Canton Fair or on Alibaba, they're not going to be the same sort of supplier that gives me those sorts of terms. So I look for a particular type of supplier and a particular type of product, and then I have a much more secure business that's harder for people to copy.
And it's interesting you mentioned all those different parts of the contract, like, I mean, a part of the agreement, by thinking of how much will it cost with 500 units versus 10,000 units, and really getting clear on their capability of also giving you 10,000 units in case your business does take off for that particular product. And a lot of this episode has been focused on what you should be doing, what works. But I'm wondering if we could take a little turn and you share with us what you believe holds most people back from really dominating with Amazon selling.
Okay, good question. So what holds people back? Firstly, there's always that mindset challenge. Because with Amazon, you're paying for the product up front. You're buying it first and hoping to sell it for a good margin second. There's that leap of faith. And even now, when I've done all my homework and I've, even if I've met the suppliers, that moment where you hit send on the first bank wire transfer to pay your supplier to make something you hope that they're going to make right and that you hope you can sell for the price you hope you can get, I still get butterflies at that point of that sort of no return of sending the money over to get started. So it's good to have a little bit of tension and excitement, but I think some people overthink that. They're looking for the perfect $1 million product, or they're just going in. They think that the more mainstream and obvious a product, the more customers there'll be for it, therefore the more likely they are to get sales. Whereas I think that's flawed. I think you get better sales for the less obvious products where there's less competition. There's some quite sophisticated Amazon sellers out there now, and there's a lot of tools and services giving people various hacks and shortcuts, some of which are a bit dodgy, I would say. But some of which are just, you know, people throw money at a promotion and that gets them some profile and that's fine. But I don't want to have to throw that much budget at each project, at each product that I launch. So I think too many people go for products that are too competitive and they've been over-reliant on research tools. So there's some software tools out there that I think can give slightly sketchy numbers, and people don't do their own proper due diligence on the product and the trends and the keywords and the what the competition's offering. And, you know, some of those products are seasonal. Sometimes a product might be ranked really high on Amazon, but what that seller who's thinking about selling the same product doesn't know is that there's some 99% off coupon code floating around the internet helping them launch that product to get it moving at that volume. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know. And if you're reliant on tools and trying to beat the system, there's other people also playing the same game in the same system. So that's a really hard one to win. Whereas if you've got unique products, then the products will sell, because when people find them, there's nothing else quite like them. And there's sort of that feel-good factor for the customer buying. And yeah, it's a little bit harder to set up. There's, you know, a bit more work at the front end, but so much less work and drama later on. So I think people just look for a perfect product and either freeze into inaction because they can't find the perfect product, or they go too mainstream and end up just having some big price war with someone who's got the same product. And they can't break out of obscurity. They're buried at the bottom of page 68 and a half and just can't get ranked because there's no point of difference with the product. So it has to then be on price. And then the winner is the person willing to take the lowest price, which is a terrible business.
Right. And I think that's a lot of the what people view from an outsider perspective, that kind of an environment. And it's no secret a lot of people, they want to make money as an Amazon seller. Some people are doing that very well, but there's only however many spots on page one that in some cases millions of people are trying to rank for. So as
the supplements game is just grim. You couldn't pay me to get into supplements. People have asked me, I just say no. I've got friends who've got supplements businesses that, you know, they do Shopify stuff with and funnels. Like, could you run us on Amazon?
No,
absolutely not. I need to sleep at night. And it's just a totally different game, learning how to compete with other sellers rather than learning how to choose products that people want.
And I mean, it is a great strategy you mentioned to have that long tail strategy where you're picking these products that don't have as much demand. Not everyone is trying to rank for quite yet. I'm wondering if you could share some of the other habits that you would consider essential for your success as an Amazon seller.
Oh, that's a good one. I think understanding how Amazon thinks is probably one of the most important ones, because there's this whole industry of people trying to beat Amazon, how to get onto page one, how to, I don't know, all these things around launching. It gets really complex and, you know, very tricky stuff. People come up with all these tricky things. But Amazon's always closing those loopholes. So they'll bust the people running big review groups, or they'll and take a class action against them. That's the thing with Amazon. They don't mess around. If someone's doing something with their platform they don't like, they will come down on you like a ton of bricks. If they think you're selling a supplement with false claims, they know they're the ones on the hook with the FDA or the FTC around consumer safety. If there's something being sold on their platform that shouldn't be, or it's being oversold, or there's false claims. So Amazon's terrified of that stuff. They don't want to be having scraps with the FDA. So they'll come down on those sellers and just kick them out, or close your accounts or close your listings. They're really big on product safety. They're really big on the customer experience. That's the number one thing. They're obsessed with the customer experience. So if page one of a customer's search result is full of these rigged, falsely ranked products because someone's doing a huge giveaway through some launch service, I don't think Amazon's going to like that long term. It's not the customer experience they want. They're getting a really junky product, clogging up page one where customers are looking to buy, you know, something that they actually wanted, not what's been tricked onto its way there. They want to get into different categories. So at the moment, there's a big break on the seller fees in the grocery and gourmet food category. So Amazon bought Whole Foods Market. They clearly want to get into that grocery chunk of the household weekly spend. And they've made the fees 8%, not 15% for their kind of commission, the referral fee. And so that's obviously a huge tailwind in a really easy place to get some traction and more profits and sell in the categories Amazon's looking to boost rather than fight over the ones that are already saturated. So if you can see Amazon's hiring staff that, you know, they've got job adverts running for pharmacists, you can be pretty sure Amazon's thinking about doing its own generic brand pharmaceuticals, or, you know, just watching that stuff ahead of the game, reading Amazon's press releases, understanding how Jeff Bezos thinks. He still runs the show. Every decision, every bit of that company's culture is from his head. And it's a very strong kind of top-down leadership style. So I don't think long-term Amazon will want people finding stuff on Alibaba in China, adding a zero to the price tag and shipping it straight over to Amazon's warehouse. Amazon's warehouses need to turn over products quickly. So thinking about that as you plan your inventory. So just understanding how the company Amazon does its thing, you know, what are they good at? What makes them worried? What keeps them awake at night is the stuff to think about as you choose products. So I choose really safe, really boring products. They're kind of gifty because lots of people shop on Amazon for gifts. And I like repeat purchases. I love those consumables. That makes a huge difference to your valuation when you sell. So I've got stuff in food category at the moment and clothing, which are two quite weird weird categories compared with most sellers. Most people are in kind of home and kitchen and lots of supplements and health and personal care kind of products, but they're a bit fraught for my liking. There's just too much, a lot of competition, and also products that, there's just sort of other risk kind of profiles with those, some of those other health type products. So all for a quiet life and just keeping low key and having lots of profitable products that all add up. You don't need to have any rock star products, just a portfolio of quiet, solid performers, and then build your whole business out of that. So understanding Amazon's absolutely key. If you think you can open your account and you haven't quite followed the instructions for submitting the paperwork, expect to just be locked out for months while you have a battle with them about getting that account reopened, because there's a lot done by machine and there's a lot done to protect customers. There's a lot done on the compliance side around tax and identity of the sellers, which country they're in, their tax ID, their address. If you submit a blurry scan of your passport, the machine will reject it, but you haven't got an open account then to argue or resubmit. You know, there's just silly things you can get wrong when you don't understand quite how Amazon works. So the people I teach how to do product selection, I also teach them how Amazon thinks. There's a few books to read, but also just lots of examples of this is Amazon's policy, this is how you should interpret it and deal with it.
And it's interesting, like all those different things you mentioned about Amazon's policies and just the idea of understanding how Amazon thinks, because if they come up with some algorithm change and you anticipated it, that can help you with being prepared for it. And there, I mean, Amazon's in control pretty much of how products get ranked. So it's best to know how they're thinking if you want to be an Amazon seller. Definitely a great insight from Sophie in this episode. One of the things that I also want to tackle, I know you mentioned the 4-Hour Workweek earlier. That's a really great book. I'm wondering though if you could share with us 3 other books that have had a positive impact on you.
Oh, so Rich Dad Poor Dad is definitely really good. For the internet marketing world, by the time something's published, it's just about almost out of date. You know, there's a few classics. So the Russell Brunson stuff's just fantastic because he's obviously got his ClickFunnels software to build these funnels on, but just that whole psychology of taking the customer through a sort of an ascension from a simple initial contact to building like and trust and then an offer, then a bigger ticket offer, that's pretty clever stuff. And there's been a lot of people do really well with that model. And if you were new to online business, that was one of the first books that someone recommended me to read. And so I read Expert Secrets and Dot-Com Secrets early on. I was like, I can do all of that from home at the kitchen table and run a serious business, not just tinker around with a little business. So that model's really cool. Funnels. So I like learning about funnels. Rich Dad, Poor Dad to learn about money and wealth rather than cash flow and how to use your brain and time for best return and long-term financial security and quality of life. Which other ones do I like? One more would be probably something a bit softer, something like Danielle Laporte, and she did a book, it's Orange, and the title is Firestarter Sessions, I think. So it's all about kind of planning ahead your kind of core desired feelings. So I don't want to have the feeling of running an empire. I want to have the feeling of waking up in the morning and looking at the weather and deciding what I want to do and who I want to do it with. Do I want to ride my horse today? Is it a good ski day? I'll take my kids to school, then go for a coffee. Like that freedom is worth far more to me than an extra zero and a massive, you know, number of staff where the phone doesn't stop ringing. I love to be able to travel. So I love that kind of learning and adventure and kind of continuous learning is really important in my business. And if you're not learning and don't enjoy learning in e-commerce, you're going to probably be out of the game pretty quickly because it changes so fast. So that book was really good for getting clear on how I wanted my business to work for me. So I wasn't 100% motivated by money. It had to be worth doing and give me freedom and security, but not, you know, it sort of helps you unpick which bits are ego, which bits are just noise in the system, which bits actually would really work for you, what would make you feel proud of your business. So I never sell any crappy products that I wouldn't use or, you know, show my mum or something. You know, they're just, they're good quality products. So I pick them because I like them, not just, well, obviously they have to know that customers want them, not just me, but they're brands I'm proud of once I've built them. So that book was really good. There's lots of little exercises in there just to get clear on, how you want to feel in life. So it's a bit beyond your business. It's quite a holistic approach, but that was a really good book. And I've read quite a lot like that, and some of them are quite lightweight and fluffy, but that was a really good one with good exercises to get clear on what you needed out of life and out of your business.
Sophie, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations. We'll also throw in content marketing secrets in there for people who want to get revenue from their content. So all those books will be over at markguberti.com/E309. Before we wrap up this episode, Sophie, I'm wondering if you could share with us one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often.
Well, there's definitely a lot of people very complacent, just assuming that the future of, you know, the, especially for online businesses, that things won't change. So I think people need to be thinking, how can I generate more sources of passive income? So really always diversifying, always learning, and always looking for new opportunities. So the question is, how can I add to my, how can I add different sources of passive income to my life? So it might be you take some money off the Amazon table and buy a rental property, and then you get some income from that rent, and it's diversified and it's passive mostly. I mean, there's never 100% passive.
Right.
And so it's up to you to educate yourself, whether you've got, you know, what kind of risk appetite you've got for shares, or whether residential or commercial property suits you better, or whether you've got good skills to trade on other platforms. But I think you can't be a one trick pony in business. There's, you know, you're just too exposed. And so looking after your money that you've made and spending that well is really, really important. And most people just, you know, they're excited about the revenue and the top line and they're all about that, but they're not looking at the profit and they're not spending their profits on future proofing themselves.
Sophie, thank you for sharing with us. I mean, that's a really great insight, that whole idea of being passive. And that's what Amazon selling is. And I mean, you have all these different streams of income. It's definitely something really nice to have. So you listening at home or in your car, think about what are your passive sources of income? What are some of the things you could add on based on what you know already, based on also what you got from this interview? And if you guys want to keep up with Sophie, see what she's doing, you can head over to aspiringentrepreneurs.com. She does Amazon coaching. She has an online program, that Product University and Amazon Navigator that I mentioned earlier. So Sophie, I mean, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. You really hit on a lot of awesome points, and thank you for taking the time to be on Breakthrough Success.
Thanks, Mark. It was great to be on the show. And yeah, your show's got some fantastic content. And I don't know how you managed to do 3 a week, but there's some real gems on your shows. I was just listening to the one about working with influencers the other day, and that was a really good one. So it's always good to just keep learning, and people that listen to podcasts do well in business, I think, because it's such a great way to learn and sort of see what's working for other people and stay current, because the published book thing's just too slow in this game. You need to have kind of current conversations and listen to people who are willing to share.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markguberti.com/PD.